This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/cast.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 21. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
And joining us for the second round of predicting is Patrick Beja and Steven Schleicher. Patrick, welcome back.
Woohoo! Thanks.
It's good to have you back. Patrick Beja from Frenchspin.com. And Steven, you came back as well. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me back.
Steven from Majorspoilers.com, and you should check out both those sites, Frenchspin.com and Majorspoilers.com, when you get a chance. But first, you have to listen to this, because we have some predicting to do, don't we, Scott?
We absolutely do. It is time to talk about the future, Tom. The future, the very future we're all going to have, we hope.
But we always start by looking into the past, into our email. Clint in Seattle, Washington, wrote in and said, "Hey, I'm a few episodes behind." He's in the past. "I like to listen to your shows three at a time. A few weeks ago, you talked about creating pills to erase negative memories. What about positive memories? Sounds weird, but aren't some of the best experiences the first one you had? If that seems a little too much, you could always use it on your favorite movies."
This is so you get your memory of your first time seeing Star Wars, so you could live it all over again. Is that the idea?
Yeah, I think that's the deal. It's like, oh, seeing something for the first time, that's cool.
I'd worry that when I was eight and I saw it and it literally changed my life, seeing Star Wars as a kid. It really changed my direction in life. I wonder if I could erase that memory and then see it now, I'd probably think this is not as good as everyone says it is. You know what I mean?
It's funny. I was reading Leo Laporte's FormSpring question thing, FormSpring.me, and he was saying exactly this. He said, when I watched Star Wars for the first time, it wasn't that great. And all the people who have such fond memories for it now are people who were 8 years old when they first saw it, and they didn't realize how crappy George Lucas is at writing and, you know, doing basically everything.
How dare you say that, sir?
Wow.
It's not me. It's Leo Laporte. Go ask him.
Look, trust me. We're watching for the Film Sack podcast next week is the Howard the Duck.
Oh, good Lord.
One only needs to see that to be reminded of how terrible George Lucas can
his
be.
His prowess.
About it. But, Patrick, you bring up a good point. If you're 8 years old and you see this movie, it's part of the time that you're eight. In other words, I don't think you can switch around memories or erase memories and relive them, because so much of that memory is contextual to who you are and when you are.
Yeah, you'd have a cascading memory failure or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brain overflow. Blue screen.
So maybe you fell in love with your wife because she reminded you of Princess Leia, and all of a sudden you don't know Princess Leia anymore, and you're not in love with your wife. It's very dangerous technology.
Exactly.
The gold bikini had me.
What if we do it on recent stuff, though? Like, you go to a restaurant and it's awesome and you had a great time, and then you go the next week and you're like, oh, it was better the first time when I was really surprised. So you just wipe that out and you go the next week and you're like, oh, it's awesome again.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you step on the scale and you're like, why am I keep getting fatter and fatter? I don't understand. Remember. I think I'll go have that pizza again.
I don't remember having before.
All right. Send us your predictions, folks, to email forecastpodcast@gmail.com is the address, or you can just post them up at forecastpodcast.com as comments on our blog, like so many others do. Time for the long-term predictions. These are the long-term sci-fi, weird, strange to turn your world upside down sorts of things. 50, 100 years, whatever. They're on the farther horizon than last episode. Steven, let's start with you. What do you got for us?
Unfortunately, I think in 100 years, we're still going to be looking down at our feet. And so I don't have a lot of...
Not if we eat that pizza or not.
I don't have a lot of positive hope that, you know, people are like, oh, we're going to be on Jupiter and we're going to be out of the solar system in 100 years. You know, it's been, 40 years now since we've been to the moon, 30 plus years since we've been to the moon, and we haven't been back. We're constantly focused on the here and now. So my concern is that in the next 100 years... we're going to be kind of in a situation where if energy isn't taken under control, we're going to be in an energy crisis. Aggressions are going to keep building. I think we're going to be in a serious kind of I don't want to say a world war, but something very similar to that, where there's a lot of aggression between all the countries of the world. I know it doesn't sound happy and positive, but I just think at this point that's kind of that reality.
Holy crap, you are echoing what I'm going to say in a few minutes. Okay. Keep going.
Well, let me propose this idea. It occurred to me the other day, like in 1980, it was easy for me to go, 100 years ago, it was 1880.
Right.
And that seemed like a universe away in terms of what was going on in 1880 versus 1980. Mm-hmm. Well, now I think, all right, it's 2010. 100 years ago, it was 1910.
Right.
That is not that long ago. In other words...
Is that just because we're getting older?
Like, even from then till now, that much has changed. So I kind of think you're right. I think that you know, we tend to like to think that in 100 years, you know, we're flying on hover cars and drinking, you know, stuff out of, you know, whatever those things in Star Trek are called. Can't think of they're called. Food replicators.
Cups?
Yeah, cups.
we'll never have cups. You're crazy.
We're probably going to be in the same boat in a lot of ways. It's very interesting.
My great grandmother,
Scott. What are you talking about? In the early 1900s, we had barely invented electricity and cars.
Well, let me give you this some perspective. My great grandmother was born in the early 1900s, and she lived until about 1992, somewhere around there. In that time, she saw electricity in the home, plumbing in the home. She saw the telephone invented. She saw the car. She saw air flight. And air flight moved from this crazy thing that these two guys were doing over in Kitty Hawk to the Concorde jet flying to France in just a few hours. She even saw someone land and walk on the moon in that time period. But since the 1960s onward, have we really truly had giant jumps in the changes of our lifestyle? We still have cars. We have the internet. We have the internet. That is a big change.
It was 69 that the internet was first tested and launched with those four universities. Right. So,
and again, why haven't we been back to the moon? Why haven't we tried to colonize the moon like we were promised back in our textbooks from
What's
the 1970s?
What's the point?
I mean, I think in 100 years we're still going to be kind of in this. Well, you know, in 100 years we'll be on the moon, and we're
no. But what you guys are saying is basically we haven't gone to the moon, so we haven't done anything. And it's not that we haven't done anything. It's like I remember that I have a very vivid example of people thinking, you know, by the year 2000 we're going to have machines at home that will cut off. Carrots for us and make, you know, like cut up carrots or potatoes or whatever.
Julian fries.
Home. That's not how it works. We went a different way and we get the carrots already cut from the factory. So this is to illustrate the point that the way we imagine the future, sometimes it's not that we didn't go that far. It's just that we went a different direction. And I would submit that the internet is so major that it's as important as electricity or, you know,
I would agree with you, but I just really think that we've been focused more in probably the last 30 or 40 years of looking inward onto ourselves instead of looking outward as to the great possibilities.
Yeah, I totally agree. I wish it was different, but I totally agree. I feel like everything that we're doing is a refinement on what's become before. And my point about 1910 being not that different is that cars and electricity are just becoming a reality. Well, really, we're still using electricity and we have nicer cars, but really, we haven't really changed all that much. And all we've done is use those things to the point of depleting the earth of all of its resources. And we aren't looking outward enough to say, what are some of the other possibilities? Where are the great discoveries that we are content not to think are there?
I mentioned last week about energy and how we really need to move forward with solar, nuclear, and wind. Yet here in Southwest Kansas, they're actually building another power plant that's solely coal-based because, hey, coal is a clean energy according to the lobbyists. And why are we still using coal when we have all of these other things? It's like, why are we relying on this stuff from the past and maybe refining it, maybe cleaning it up, but not really moving forward with anything radically different?
It's interesting because I think we are moving at a more rapid pace in science and technology. And that's the whole idea behind Ray Kurzweil and his singularity is near, as our discoveries keep picking up and picking up. But what you guys are pointing out is really important here, which is that pace is a lot very much around communication and information than it is around the physical geography. Now, maybe that's just because the need for moving around isn't as great, right? We actually had a huge need to move from, like, gosh, you know, we can't even sail a boat across the ocean, to, okay, now we can move things around the globe at pretty much as fast as we need to, right? Mm-hmm, I mean, it's pretty amazing that you can get fruit any time of year. That didn't happen even in the 60s and 70s. I remember people saying, oh, the grapes are back in season. Now you can get grapes anytime you want. I mean, they may not be as good certain times a year, but, you know, we've kind of hit the wall, maybe. We kind of violated the Moore's law of physical transportation. And so I think you're right, Stephen. A lot of it seems inward because it's informational. And think about, you know, we can not only get up in that plane and fly around the world, but we can call people from that plane. We can play World of Warcraft on that plane. We can carry a computer in our pockets now that is 10 times as powerful as the computer they used to break Nazi encryption in World War II. I mean, it's incredible the technological advances that we've had, but they're not as outward. They don't change necessarily the way we move around, and so they don't maybe seem as dramatic when you talk about, because my grandma was the same as your great grandma. I mean, when she was a little girl in the early 1900s, it took a couple days to go from her house, which had an outdoor bathroom, to St. Louis. And mm-hmm. when I was talking to her in the 80s, we'd just hop in the car and drive there in an hour. So that, you know, that's incredible to think of. And now it's like, well, it used to take, you know, a couple days to send a letter to somebody, and now I zip them an email in 1 minute. It doesn't sound as impressive for some reason.
Right.
It is, you know, it has to do with practical applications, which we were talking about in the previous show. We went to the moon, and then we were like, okay, now what? You know what we should do rather than worrying about going to the moon? Maybe we should get fruit every, you know, month of the year in everywhere. And once we get, it might be cyclical, maybe in a few dozen of years, a few decades, we'll go back to that and we'll get more of the transportation worries. But for now, we've settled the transportation issue. Going to the moon is not going to serve anyone any purpose. I'm not saying we shouldn't do it, we shouldn't explore. I actually think we should go to Mars. But it's not as there isn't a strong motivation factor because of the way the world works, and the innovation goes to practical commercial uses first. And since we've solved all of our transportation issues, most of them, then we're going to other things. And maybe the next frontier is going to be the inner frontier. I don't know what that means.
All right.
Well, no, I think you're right on that. But I just think that if we're looking at the current population growth, and we're you know, at some point we're going to run out of space and we're going to run out of resources, so we have to go outward to do that. And right now, even with the space shuttle program, we've known for 20 years that this stuff was going to be obsolete in 20 years, and yet we still haven't come up with a replacement for the shuttle program.
Yeah. I mean, my personal opinion to round this out is we need to go to Mars for this reason and this reason only. To get to recover Ronnie Cox's body and give him a proper burial here.
Well said. Well said, my friend. Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will get Patrick's predictions.
This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners to this podcast, Audible is offering a free audio book to give you a chance to try out their service. One book we might recommend would be something from Malcolm Gladwell, say The Tipping Point, a perfect companion piece to what we do right here on Forecast, an excellent book in its own right. And really makes you think, like we try to do each and every episode. Again, you can get that or any audiobook available on Audible for free by going to audiblepodcast.com/cast.
Okay, Patrick Beja, let's turn to you now. What are your long-term predictions? What do you see in our more distant future?
All right, I'm going to go against the usual dystopian easy shot. And I'm going to say that we have seen the last of the major wars of our era. The Christian era, I guess, or this, our civilization. World War II was the last major conflict, and we're not going to have another one for many reasons. The main one being sort of a consequence of what we were saying with transportation and communication and all that. We basically have one, the global village, and we are so dependent on one another on the economical side of things, that we can't really afford to have a major conflict anymore. We're going to have Europe, you know, the Americas, China, and maybe Russia to be, and probably Africa within a few years, which are going to be major hubs. And all of these are so entangled that we cannot afford to have a wide conflict. Now, it might happen, we might have skirmishes like, I don't know, you know, Yugoslavia, Kosovo, Sudan, things like that. Of course, it's not the end of wars, but no world war, no major conflict. And I have a little caveat here, on Earth.
Oh. But after the burial, there'll be a big breakout of a fight, huh?
Possibly. But yeah, no, I really think that world wars are a thing of the past now.
Hmm. Now, didn't actually talk about Stephen's prediction about aggression so much. You know, we kind of focused on the advancement part of it. What do you think, Stephen? I mean, that pretty much diametrically opposes your prediction.
Well, I agree with Patrick on a sense, but in this next 100 years, I don't think we're going to be that calm with one another. I think all it takes is one or two little aggressors who get the little power and want the attention, and that's going to set something off, and then you've got everybody else retaliating and going crazy. But I kind of do understand where Patrick's coming from. We may not have a physical war. I could see that. We certainly might have a cyber war and those kinds of things right now that control of information is going on. So, yeah, maybe the war will be a little bit different, but I still think all it's going to take is somebody throwing a really big rock, and that's going to cause everything to kind of collapse.
The thing is, there might be other kinds of wars, but what I'm saying is that we're not going to have, you know, hundreds of thousands of people pitted against the same number of other people on the other side,
right?
Simply because, you know, we can't afford it. Who is going to attack whom? China is not going to attack us or the U.S. We are basically building their country by buying everything they do. We're not going to attack them because we're not going to have any crap to buy if we attack them. Europe is so entangled in the economic side. Europe, the premise of the European Union is let's get everyone together and be economically codependent so that we can't attack one another. And this is also being applied to the whole world, and I think it's working.
I like that idea. I just think that there are a lot of people that are kind of conflicting with one another. Last week we were talking about, or I had mentioned, alternative energies. What happens when this oil production gets so critical? And of course, all of our products are made out of some kind of oil-based product. What happens when that builds? Do you see that being a huge conflict between countries?
No, we'll find something else. Who is going to attack whom if we don't have oil? Let's say in 100 years we don't have oil anymore. First, I think we're going to have other sources of energy. And second of all, what's going to happen? The Arab countries are going to start attacking people? Why? There's no point. Terrorism, which some people are saying is, you know, the new form of warfare. I might be offensive to some people here, and not to diminish the terrible effect that terrorism has, but it's really just a detail in the scale of history, casualty-wise. You know, it's a few thousand people at most. A year maybe, and it's really not a major conflict at all. And the actual effect that terrorism has is terror, not casualties.
Well, you make a good point, Patrick. I actually agree that the whole terrorism as a thing, if you look at it statistically, is a very small thing. But its goal is to freak everybody out, and make it seem way bigger than it is. And they certainly are successful at doing that. But I guess I would say to you, this comes up on the show all the time. What about the water wars that we're all expecting? If we get to a point where there's a serious shortage of drinkable water on this planet, then it becomes a whole nother fight. And forget about the idea that, I mean, if oil dried up suddenly and suddenly nobody have it, well, there's not going to be any war or any kind of fight or any kind of interest in any parts of the world that there wouldn't be otherwise. But right now we're already seeing lack of oil in certain parts of the world. So what happens? People like the United States get themselves nestled in nice and clean into the Middle East, which causes a lot of conflict. I don't know how you get away from that unless it all just sort of stopped. If suddenly it stopped, nobody has any reason to be over there, right?
What do you mean? You're still talking about oil?
Oil, yeah, I guess I am. I keep going back to oil. But my point is, right now it's oil. What happens when it's water? What happens when it's, you know, let's say global warming is truly as bad as everyone thinks it'll be, and suddenly we can't grow the crops we're used to, and we can't feed the world the way we used to, and it starts to affect, you know, industrialized nations.
Well, if you factor in like major ecological catastrophe and cataclysm, basically, yes, that might be a little bit problematic for some people. So of course, if all of a sudden, you know, the sun turns funny and half of the earth is always in the dark and below 100 degrees, yes, that will, you know, minus 100 degrees Celsius, that might cause problems and it might cause wars. But at the rate we're going, I don't think all of a sudden, my point is, we're not going to have another world war with a nation going to war with another just for the sake of, you know, territorial expansion or something like that. It's not going to be
the idea. An ideological war is not. I agree with you there. That's not going to be the basis for any wars moving forward. If we have anything major on a world scale, it'll be because nobody can get a drink.
What about Pakistan and India,
record,
though?
I don't think the nobody is going to be able to get a drink is going to happen either. But
I don't think so either. Yeah.
What about Pakistan and India, though, Patrick? I mean, that seems to be the one likely place that people think there could still be an ideological war, a war against the interests of both countries, but because of the tensions and because they both have nuclear weapons, that they could finally, you know, be that hair trigger item that kicks off a nuclear war.
Yeah, you know, there is this idea that in some, you know, third world or, you know, second world country on the verge of the two, some things might happen. But I also think that one idea that we haven't fully integrated yet is that all of these countries, including very poor countries, you know, in Africa and other places, are evolving really, really, really fast. And that's something that becomes very apparent when you watch things like Hans Rosling's study of statistics and mm-hmm. world economics and demography. And these risks exist in the next maybe 10, 20, 30 years. And they're only risks. It's not that it's going to happen. But beyond that, the world is going to reach a level of comfort, of physical comfort and industrialization and evolution that we are all going to be part of that industrialized world with economic, you know, dependence, codependence, including countries like Pakistan and, you know, even the super poor one and Africa and Afghanistan and everywhere. The whole world's standard of living is being raised really, really fast. And these countries are doing in 50 years the work that we did in 500. So it's not apparent when you look at it from day to day, but if you take a few generations, it's very clear.
I don't know. Part of the Industrial Revolution was having, 100 years war, World War I, World War II. If those countries have to go through the same evolution as Europe, doesn't that make it likely that we would have a big war between them? And India and Pakistan,
yeah,
we're not talking about just impoverished countries. I mean, these are industrializing countries, and they hate each other.
Sure, but they are not to the level of super big, middle class, super rich middle class that we are in now. And once they reach that level, which I think they are going to, yes, and they are on the path to, then they won't have an interest. Because basically, why do you want to wage war? It's to you. Of course, it has elements of we hate you and we want to kill you. But it's also economic reasons. And once mm-hmm. you have comfort, you don't really want to go off to war. And I think that Pakistan and Afghanistan, it might take a little while. So in the next 30 years, maybe it's going to happen, but I don't think so. And if we look beyond 30 years, we are in this scenario, you know, looking more towards the mm-hmm. you know, 1,000, 2,000 years, whatever. No, what is it? Here it's 400, right?
50, 100, whatever you want.
Okay, whatever we want. But yeah, so I think they will reach that level without... I don't see Afghanistan and Pakistan going at it just for the sake of going at it now. There is a possibility, but look at how it went between us and the Eastern and Western bloc after World War II. You could have said, and everyone thought, it's going to blow up at one point and it's going to be total annihilation. But even then we were thinking, well, we don't really want to die. And I don't think that the it's going to happen there either, or anywhere else.
It turned out Sting was right. The Russians loved their children too.
Yeah.
Well, we heard when he said it. So.
All right. Well, that's great. Thank you, Patrick. I hope you're right. But I do kind of tend to side a little bit with Steven on the aggression. But maybe you're both right. Maybe the aggression will be there, but it just won't be big wars.
And also, yes, just to finish this off, even Pakistan versus Afghanistan doesn't fully enter my category of world war. It's more of a local skirmish. It might be a few million dead, but it's still, you know, not the full thing that we had in the world wars.
Well, Pakistan versus Afghanistan, maybe. Pakistan versus India could spread. It could pull people down, I think. But, you know, we'll define it 400 years, and then they'll have their war before that, and then your prediction will be right.
Okay, thank you.
All right, don't forget to follow Patrick Beja on the web. Frenchspin.com is one site, but tell other people the other places you can find you.
NoWatch.tv and NoWatch.fm are two of our ongoing projects, and Twitter.com/NotPatrick is where you can get news about my daily things that I do.
Steven Schleicher, I feel a certain bond to you having grown up on Interstate 70 over in Illinois. So very happy to have you on these shows. And where can people find your stuff on the net?
They can head over to MajorSpoilers.com. They can head over to CoolnessRoundup.com for some tech news, Major Spoilers for some comic book and pop culture news. And if they want to follow us on Twitter, they can just look us up under Major Spoilers.
And of course, Frog Pants Studios and Subbrilliant Media come together like some sort of Transformer type Voltron thing to produce this podcast, and you can find all the great Frog Pants stuff in one place, right, Scott?
That's right, all at frogpants.com. The unholy union that is Subbrilliant and Frog Pants can also be featured or seen in Current Geek at currentgeek.com. that is the other show Tom and I do, so make sure you check that out if you enjoy this. That's 3 days a week, and of course everything at frogpants.com will make you smile.
Twitter.com/extra life to follow Scott on the Twitter, and I'm at twitter.com/acedetect, A-C-E-D-T-E-C-T. Don't forget to leave comments at our website, forecastpodcast.com, or send us an email. Why don't you? You never write. It's forecastpodcast@gmail.com. Is that so hard? It doesn't take a pony to bring it. We'll see you later, folks.
See ya.
But it's only 32 years away.